Welcome back to the Real Expat Wives of Arabia. It is time to introduce my next guest. I, again, have been just so honored to be a part of this amazing Facebook group. And if you are a woman out there and you're thinking about coming to the Middle East, or you're in the Middle East and you need a good Facebook group, this Facebook group is called Expat Women in Saudi Arabia is the name of the Facebook group. I will include it on the notes once again. And this lovely lady I'm about to introduce is from, well, she's not from, but she's based in Riyadh, and her name is Francesca Hilton, and she is not related to the Hiltons. I had to check first. But she is just awesome. What an awesome to the cheekiest. I'm so honored to have met her and hear her story and her unique experiences of coming over to the Middle East. And we talk all things of compound life, having children here in the hospital experience, traveling with children, you know, her working, hubby working, her not working, hubby not working. Got a lot to say, and I hope you enjoy it just as much as I do. Thanks for listening and being a part of this whole thing. Bye, guys.
Hi, Kim. Perfect. How are you?
I'm good, darling. I love this UK accent, because when people talk to me, I feel so fancy.
I know. I listened to one of your ladies' podcasts, and she was so, so cute. Like, every time she said darling, darling, I was like, oh, so cute.
Oh, that's Heidi. Yeah, Heidi. She just makes me feel posh. Just to be near her, I feel posh.
Yeah, I definitely got that vibe from the podcast.
Bless her. Yes! I love my British peeps. I love all my UK people. It's awesome. So, no, Francesca Hilton, yes, are you related to Hiltons?
No, I wish I was.
Sad. Okay.
No. But I'm Frankie. It's easier to call me Frankie. Are we straight in?
Oh, so yeah, no, we are technically, like, we're recording, okay. But like, I go in and like edit everything. So
amazing.
Yeah, I
almost need like a kickstart, like a go, and then I'm like, okay, we're in it, you know?
Okay, yeah. Honestly, like, I do this for no, like, our voices needed to be heard. I don't know how else to describe it. Just sharing the experience and sharing the story of what it's like. I don't know. Like, before we came to Saudi, I didn't know anybody that had lived this life. And so... Yeah. You know, I feel like the life that we live by being expats is very, very unique. And it's a really cool experience. And not a lot of people, I guess, really talk about it or know about it. Or like, I think it's good for people to like empathize. And it's hard to explain to people your life if they don't understand your life. Or if they're not expats themselves, they just don't. You know what I mean? Like, I know families for generations and generations and generations that have never even left like their state in the USA. Right. So... anyways, that's kind of a huge side off on that. But yeah. I just felt, yeah. And so I started, it was just kind of like a spark in me that was like, you know what, you need to provide a platform for people to tell their stories. And then other expat women can completely listen to it and relate. So yeah, tell me how, so you enjoyed listening to Heidi.
I did. Yeah. I really loved
her.
It was nice to hear a fellow Brit. Yeah, so I have been in Saudi for 4 years. So I moved here in 2018. So we've been in the Middle East for much longer, though. We lived in Dubai for maybe 4 or 5 years. It gets a bit confusing because there was a time when me and my husband crossed over between him living here and me living in Dubai. So I get a bit like... gray on how long we've actually been away, but I think about 9 years now, 10 years. So yeah, so it's so lovely to have a podcast that is kind of talking to people that have moved to the Middle East, and specifically Saudi, because I remember being in Dubai and thinking, oh my god, I have no idea what I'm going into Saudi at all. And also because I did this first move there, I'd never been to Dubai. When I first moved to Saudi, I'd never been to Saudi. Wow. So I'm a real leap of faith kind of girl. So yeah, I just go for it. But sometimes I feel like it's better not knowing exactly, because it's like, okay, I'm just going to roll with the punches and I'm just going to do it.
Exactly. Because then you have no like expectation in your head. You're just like, I'm going to go with it as it comes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally did the same. I mean, I was coming from, you know, South Florida, and then we moved to Texas, and then we came all the way to the Middle East.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I did not put any, you're right, I didn't put much thought into it at all. I was like, you know what? We'll figure it out when we get there. Like, whatever.
For sure. You know? The expat community is so great, isn't it? So you do kind of find your feet. But my husband always laughs because I'm a real, like, cup half full kind of person. And I'm always like, I love living here. And he's like, but do you not remember the first 6 months of every time we live somewhere else, you don't like it? Like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, because it's that like initial shock and initial finding mm-hmm. your feet and not having your friends or a tribe or anyone to kind of know. But then when you find that, it's just the best. So I just think it's just that time you need to invest into it. I think if you give up within the first 6 months a year, then you're not doing it justice and it does get better.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. I've seen that a lot. Where people just throw the towel in before they've even given it enough chance.
Yeah, exactly. I've watched those people come and go, and I'm always mm-hmm. like, oh, it's such a shame. Like, just, mm-hmm. and also, like I said, cup half full. And also, like, my absolute motto for being an expat is the grass is greenest where you water it. So mm-hmm. wherever you are, like, hone in on it, make it your home, focus on that. Good as opposed to the bad, because we know there's bad and we know there's tricky and we know you need the patience of a saint to do it all, but it's mm-hmm. just having the right mindset for it and knowing that you're putting your all into it. Because most of the people that I've watched come and go in, it's been that they haven't made it their home and they haven't really honed in on it, and they've kind of given it a bad rep from the outset. What that was both Dubai and here.
Okay. Oh my goodness. I can't believe people would ever even complain about Dubai.
I know, but it was a long time ago, I suppose, because it felt like, so when
they must be out there, damn mine.
I know. Uh-uh. I know. Dubai is the best, isn't it? But you know what? I'd never say never. I don't know if I'd go back. I feel like I did my time there, but then I don't want the right. universe to listen and to I'm, me back in.
I'm sure being a, well, yeah, I'm sure being like residing there versus, you know, like most people here in Saudi, we know Dubai is just like a quick getaway weekend or,
yeah,
you know, if you're residing in Dubai, I could imagine.
It was just so different back in the day. Yeah. Like when we were there, yeah, like 9 or 10 years ago, how long ago it was more like kind of Saudi is now, I suppose, in a way. And it was just different. And going from the UK and not knowing anything about the Middle East, I think that was the thing. It wasn't so much that Dubai was different. It was perhaps that I just had no clarity on what it would be like to live in the Middle East. And then I got on the plane and, like I said, never been there, flying with Emirates, got to the airport and thought, oh my God, what have I done? Like hearing the call to prayer for the first time and all these things that you just have no idea what you're kind of going into. And now I'm in Riyadh and we're so much later on. Maybe it's just that I've just got used to the way of living and the way it works. And so it's just different.
I think you've been put in a very blessed position, because I think Dubai would be a wonderful warm-up. Coming to Saudi. And,
yeah.
You know, like, you came right in the year when women were declared legal to then drive the road. Because prior to that, you either had to get a driver or your husband had to drive you. That was your two choices. Yeah.
Driver thing for a while. And it was great in some ways because, like, the roads, obviously, my mantra is don't drive past 4. I just can't. Like, I have to sometimes and I really struggle with it. But if I'm driving the day now, I love the independence of it. I think it's so brilliant. But back in the day, I used to love the laziness of having a driver because it was like, great. Like, see, brilliant.
And I think right. a lot of women were like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm just gonna drive, but I'm still going to grab a driver.
Yeah, because... and it was so great.
It's just really relaxing and
yeah, you can listen to podcasts, you can look at your phone, you can do whatever. But then when it changed and we could drive, I probably wasn't in the first batch of people to go for it, but I wasn't too far off because I knew from Dubai that once you can drive, it changes again your Middle East experience so much because you do get the independence. And I think when you live in compounds, it can feel really claustrophobic and it can feel really small. And that was something that I was so aware of. So making sure I went out to see the latest breakfast spots and making sure that I was out and about in the day, not just confining myself to the compounds. I knew I needed that to kind of enjoy the Saudi experience. So yeah, driving for me was a real changing point. And, you know, the way we can dress now has been so different. Like when we first came, it was all abayas. And now obviously it's just the modest dressed approach, which is my style anyway. So I'm more than happy to honour that. But yeah, I just feel like it has changed a lot. And it's so great watching it, like being a part of it.
I know. Yeah. It's exciting times for sure. I feel over and over, I just remind myself how blessed I am to be here and witness, because we've been here in Saudi for about 8 years.
Oh, nice.
And so we've seen like a lot happen because a lot of these changes have happened quite recently. So there wasn't much going on in terms of,
I can imagine,
you know, quite. Freedom yeah. for women for a while. So that, again, I think the timing, the land knew when it was a good time to bring you over here. And so it prepped you first with Dubai.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
The Saudi land was like, okay, we're ready for her to come here. Now that it's 2018, yeah. She can, you know,
she can do
that's
it.
How I but felt for me. It's like, oh, they knew the Houghton family was coming. So they had to make these changes to like prepare the way. And you said it so beautifully about not staying confined to the compound, because that was such a huge issue for me and for many women for a long time. And so as soon as I remember the day they declared it legal, I got in that car and I went to my gate, to my guard, and he opened that gate and he had a smile on his face and I had a smile on my face, and we were just like sharing the joy together. Like he was so happy to let me out on the road. Because
and then
you know I could do that.
And back in. Like, okay, that's enough.
And I just went out and I drove. And we live in like such a really remote spot. So you're up in Riyadh. Have you ever been down to the Eastern Province? Down in like Khobar, Dammam?
Have been like on the way to Bahrain, but I haven't I haven't stopped at Khobar, no.
Okay. So we live in this little tiny place called Ras Tanura, and like we're beautiful beach. Like our entire community, we're basically like a beach little community. But we're so far, we're about an hour's drive from Khobar, which is where like all the restaurants are and the malls are. And
so it's
really not that big of a deal. But I've been driving out there even before I even got my Saudi license. I was driving because they would let me and they didn't stop me. And a lot of people were like, well, what if you get into wreck? What if? And I was like, I don't know. What if? I don't know, because I just don't think about what ifs. I just do. And then if it happens, I deal with it then.
But I just remember I don't know if you would have had it, but in Riyadh, like you'd see another woman and you'd like literally car high five, be like, wow, like look at us go. Like everyone was so excited. And it's just
oh, I know.
Especially
the Saudi women.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, although I did have a really questionable, we had to do a test here. One lady, bless her, she hit every cone in the test. Like, I'm not joking.
Yes!
She hit every cone. And then she was shocked she didn't pass. And I was thinking,
wow.
I'm not sure that's how you pass.
Yeah.
Try again.
Yeah, so I think the deal was that they had to, like, they were, well, again, I think enforcement and then, like, follow-up of that enforcement is kind of an interesting concept here in Saudi. But I think what they were trying to do is get the Saudi women to do like a course, and then once they had completed the course, then they could get their
so we just had to, like, because I know for the husbands they can just translate their licenses, but for us we had to do a mini test, and it was crazy because I've been driving since I was so young.
You're saying even us that had driver's license, like I could understand if it was just like Saudi women that have never driven before, but
we have a license, but
we already have a license.
The funny thing is I was so suddenly scared. I was like, oh my God, I can't drive. And I was thinking, you can drive. But the idea of my, you know, 35-year-old driving test, I was like, oh my God, I can't do it. I can't remember how to parallel park. I cannot do this. And I was so scared, even though it was the most basic test. And obviously I did pass,
even in the U.S., when I got my driver's license, parallel parking was not a part of that test. Oh, so
it's hard.
It's like they picked the hardest thing for you to do.
Yeah, literally. So I actually wasn't far off this girl. Riad Row is the next level crazy. Like you just, it's something
parallel
you really
parallel parking
have to...
takes major skill.
Yeah, it does. I'm not equipped.
I mean, but Riad Row is crazy. I just made sure, like, I practiced a few times. And then in the little driver car, it was a little four-door. So I was like, because it's, you know, I'm used to doing driving SUV. Mm. So anyways, but yeah, the key to parallel parking is you got to pull up real far and then you just like swing your butt in. Like when you swing the butt in, you got to swing the butt back round and then the front comes in.
But also, have they met like Saudi roads? There is no rhyme or reason to parking in this country. Like it's
Like
you
no
just
one even
park their car. Like there is no parallel parking because cars are just literally everywhere.
No order.
No, I haven't really had to worry too much. I mean, I think my husband's scared every time I park the car next to his, but otherwise I'm fine.
Oh my God. So sometimes it's just comical and you just gotta laugh because there's just nothing else to do but laugh. It's like, oh my goodness, let's roll with it.
Yeah, for sure. But it is lovely. Like it's you know, and it's those things of like joining a gym outside the compound and like going to the cinema with girlfriends. All these things, mm-hmm. suddenly it just didn't feel like so boxed in. And it right. sounds crazy if you were listening to this from England being like, why would you not be able to do those simple things? But it just felt really hard work to like book a driver, get a driver. A driver probably wouldn't be on time. And because totally. I don't really get Ubers here. I don't like them so much. So it was always like waiting for the corporate and he'd drop off some business person, then come pick up the wife. And you were definitely down in the pecking order of like getting picked up. So it was just, But yeah.
It's so true. It's so true.
You'd be sitting somewhere just waiting. Yeah. Like this. I remember getting in the DQ once, just waiting for a driver for so long. It's so hot and so intense because DQ, obviously, it's all embassies and there wasn't really anywhere to go and stand and wait. Those kind of moments where I just really wanted to drive. So when it came through, I was like, yes, great, brilliant.
Yeah. I was, from that point on, I was deuces. I was like, I'm out. If I want to go to Cobar, I go to Cobar. If I want to, now my only thing now is still I can't explain this. Okay, so I still can't drive over to Bahrain.
Why?
Because to drive over into Bahrain, I have to have my name on the car. And for the longest time, you couldn't get your name on the car if you didn't have a driver's license, but they weren't giving us driver's license. So of course my name couldn't be on the car. But now we have driver's license. And it's like to get me in the system to where, you know how like when you drive through Bahrain, everything's through like the computer system. Mm-hmm. So if the license thing registers and my name's not on there, they're not going to let me through. So trying to figure that out has been a nightmare. Like it's crazy. I don't know why I can't get on the car. I think it's through Apsure, like his Apsure account.
Yeah. And also he was almost like torture because you're so close to Bahrain. So it's like, you can almost see it.
No, I know. I'm ready to get in the car and freaking, you know. And my husband's probably like, well, it keeps you from not spending so much money. So I don't care. You know, like, because all you're going to do in Bahrain is spend money anyways.
Exactly. He's probably blacklisted you. He's probably put your name on the gate.
Yeah, something's going on with his Apsure, but.
See, it's quite far for us, isn't it? Like, it's a good six, seven, eight-hour drive, whatever it is. It's long.
For you,
yeah, and it was really long.
Yeah, you guys might be better off just flying.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was when it was COVID and we were trying to get out. It was a couple of years ago. And basically, the day we were flying back to England, I hadn't seen my family for a year. They hadn't met my daughter because she was a corona baby. And we said, right, we're going to fly out this day. Anyway, that morning, my husband, I woke up and he was white as a ghost. And I said, what's happened? And he said, Frankie, they've closed the borders in Saudi. I was like, no. Because I literally was like, I was living for this day to see my family again. I was like, okay, we're driving to Bahrain. He was like, we're not driving to Bahrain. I was like, honestly, Michael, we are loading our 8-week-old baby and our 3-year-old baby and we are driving to Bahrain. So he was like, okay, we'll drive to Bahrain. Because he'd gone to the airport. They were like, no, there's no flights going out. You can't get out this way. So anyway, we got to Bahrain and by the skin of our teeth, somehow got through into Bahrain to get a flight. That yes. day, no, we didn't. Our baby threw up from the drive. He had car sickness.
So and they wouldn't let you on the plane?
No, we couldn't get on the plane. So then luckily we did the next day. But honestly, it was like I was in some Netflix series. Like it was... Wow. Consistently, like we just couldn't get, and I know that time was tricky for everyone, but that was honestly one of the worst times of being an expat.
I tell people all the time, like, I understand it's been rough. I understand it was hard for everyone. I understand people had their dreams crushed and all this stuff and things that were planned and graduations and weddings and you know, people couldn't go to funerals if somebody had died. I mean, it's like there's just some really messed up stuff that happened. But yeah, I try to explain to people, like, it kind of goes another notch when you're an international expat traveler type person, because then you have to deal with being in another country that's not your home country. And like,
we just couldn't get back. Like, it was, we were locked in, right, weren't we, for a year. So everyone was obviously locked down in different countries in different ways. But I just felt so far away. Like, I just... for a year, and like I said, I had a baby in that time, and no one could meet her, and it was just like every month it was like, okay, this month we're going to manage it and we're going to get out, or someone's going to get in and we're going to work this out, and when it goes on for a year, it's like a bit of mental torture, and the hormones were definitely causing havoc. But
of course,
the good thing was that we again, like, cup half full, we were so happy to be in the compounds, because obviously there was no element of lockdown in the compounds. You were locked in the compound, but within the compound you could utilize the facilities and you could kind of live a relatively normal life. So the kids were able to have play dates and all these things. So that was a real blessing, because it was almost like you were in a bubble.
So you had your baby girl during that time. Did you have another child before that?
Yeah, so I had my little boy in Dubai.
Okay.
He was born in Dubai in 2018. And then I had my baby girl in Riyadh in 2020. So my little Middle Eastern babies. And the experiences were so different. Like, the great thing about having kids in the Middle East is it's literally like giving birth in a hotel. Like, they are just so great. Like, obviously the private healthcare is incredible. And both experiences, like, we were just so well looked after. But yeah, different. And I actually found Riyadh the better birth, which I think people would maybe find surprising, because again, Dubai has such a great reputation. But the doctors in Saudi were amazing, and the hospital was incredible. Everything about it was amazing. Yeah, I can highly recommend doing it here. I get asked a lot, because a lot of obviously new mums move here and they don't know where to go and what to do. And we did Kingdom Hospital. Absolutely incredible. And we did Dr. Hani Khalifa, who's the king of C-sections. So he looked after me and my baby girl and got her here safely. And the great thing about him is for some reason, I don't know if it's insurance purposes or because he's a man, but you can give birth with your husband in the room with a C-section with Hani, which other hospitals like Salman Al-Habib, you can't. You go in without your husband. And for me, I really wanted my husband to be there to share the pain. So yeah, he came in, which was great for us. So yeah, it was a really good experience.
So I didn't know that. So like, if you have to go in the hospital to give birth,
was it
because of COVID, or no, just they don't let the husbands in?
Yeah, they don't let the husbands in. I don't believe this was from way like even before COVID. They said the same.
Okay.
Yeah, that
I did
was,
not know that.
Yeah, the woman would go in by herself. Or I suppose take a mum or a sister or a friend or whoever. I'm sure that was why we went with Kingdom and
the hospital.
Because I know there's now a female doctor. I think her name's Dr. Nada, who also she's able to have men in, but that's Kingdom Hospital. So maybe it's a Kingdom Hospital thing.
Cool. Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, I've only been to Riyadh once, and it's massive. Like, I was just like, this place is like. Of course. I mean, it's the capital, right? But it's just so big. Like, it's huge.
Yeah, it is. It feels quite small when you're here, actually, but it is. It's huge. But everything's quite condensed, like in the middle, I find.
Right.
Like, all the places we tend to go. We're on the outskirts. Like, we're more out towards the airport way. My husband works in Central, and it, takes him about half an hour, 45 minutes to get to work. So it's not too bad. So yeah, it's a big city. There's a lot going on all the time, which is great. And yeah, a friend of mine actually once referred to Riyadh as like New York and Jeddah as like LA in the vibe. And I was like, oh, I really like that. That's quite a good way of describing
it. Yeah. I still haven't quite even gotten to Jeddah either. I mean, I've done the Red Sea, but from the Egypt side. Have you done Jeddah?
Yeah, I've done Jeddah for work. And yeah, it seems more laid back in comparison to Riyadh, which is quite nice, like a bit more beachy vibe. Which is nice. Whereas Riyadh feels like a proper city, like hustle and bustle. Like there's always so much going on.
Yeah, I could see that. I've heard that from so many people. I think I would really like Jeddah if I went. So, because yeah, beach vibe is right up my alley. Okay. So when you came into Saudi, were you already working or?
I worked in Dubai. I worked, as a freelance PR. So the reason I originally went out there was to work for Harvey Nichols in their PR department. So again, that was why it was a bit like, right, I'm getting on the plane because it's just too good to miss. So I went out with that. And then I eventually ended up doing my own thing in Dubai. And then I had my two kids. So I haven't really worked too much since. But in the last year, I've just been doing bits and bobs here, consultancy kind of work through Dubai clients. Nice. That's been really, really great. Yeah, it's been really good just to get back into the thick of it. And like I said, there's just so much going on in Riyadh. So yeah, it's a good time to be here and thinking about getting back into work for sure.
Yeah. So what was your degree in?
So I actually studied journalism, which I thought as I was going to jump on the call with you, I was like, God, this is so weird to be on the other side, like answering questions about me. Usually it's always me.
Then you should start a podcast. Yeah.
Oh, that would be so fun. I love the sound of my own voice. That'd be great.
Yeah, you would. I think so. I think you just sparked a little idea.
But yeah, I definitely feel like it's interesting because I can't really, I was tasked to do this the other day to have a look for some Arabic Riyadh-based podcasts. And there isn't really many that I could find. Like, I don't know if podcasting.
I think this is the sign that you are supposed to start your own. And I can help because I've been doing this now for a whole year and it's super simple. You wouldn't think how simple it is. And it's so enjoyable. And with you and your background, your experience, I think it'd be, you just got to figure out your topic, really.
Yeah. 2020 free goal, maybe. I mean, I'd have to get my Arabic up to scratch because I have nothing, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would probably not be great. But that's why I love yours so much, because I feel like the expat community, like it's completely not talked to, and it's important that it is, because like I said, when I first moved here, there was just no awareness to kind of what you'd be up against. And I love that you're exposing that, because
thank you, that gives me confirmation. And that's exactly why I started it. It's honestly just really no benefit of my own, except for the fact that understanding is going to ripple effect, like understanding and just awareness.
Yeah. And taking away the fear factor, right? Because I get so many messages on DMs and Facebook groups and all these ways of saying, you know, we're so scared and we're so nervous and we don't really know what we're going into. And I think, oh gosh, I just wish that you knew how amazing it is. Like like I said, you can just make most of it. And we live in the sun every day. Like, what's not to love? And the experience and the adventure. And my kids love it. And my husband loves it. And I love it. And we're all just in the same kind of headspace of just really enjoying the experience of it all. And I get it's really daunting when you have no idea what you're coming into.
Yeah. I mean, I know for sure all of our lives are better. That's all I can say. I mean, I'm not really one to like sell people. I'm just like, you either do it or you don't. And like,
and so many people don't, right? Because this is what we were talking about at dinner party the other day. We were saying that you've either got it or you haven't. Like, you've either got it, because people say, oh, you're so lucky. Well, no, I'm not lucky. I create luck. So that's different. Mm-hmm. Anyone can get on the plane. Anyone can create this life if they're brave enough to get on the plane. That's all you need to do. And like, my husband had no job when he first came to Dubai, but he knew, he just had faith he'd work it out. And same with Saudi, you know, we've got here and we didn't really know what we were coming to. We've both just fallen on our feet in a way that we've created.
Well, that's crazy about your husband not even having work in Dubai. But there is, again, it's very hustle bustle. Like, I feel like Riyadh is like a mini Dubai. And like,
and my husband works in construction, so he was always going to be fine. Like, he was always going to find his feet, I suppose, because we knew it was such a developing place to be.
Oh,
and there was,
like, have you seen the neon project and all that?
I know
all that stuff going on over there. It's insane.
It's incredible. It's just the ambition is just remarkable. And I love, like, I'd love to be in the room where they're like, should we just do this? And it's totally mental. And they go, yes, let's just do it. Like, that's the room I want to be in. I don't know how to get in that room.
I agree. We will be one day. Maybe we will be. You just never know.
But you know as well, like, I just feel like there's a lot of doom and gloom always in the news, and there's a lot going on in the world. And things, you know, you've just got to look at all the exciting things and all the good and all the, and honing in on the negatives just not going to bring you the life you want. So, of course, there's negative things about being an expat. There's negative things about being in Riyadh. There is. But there's so much good and great as well that you just have to keep honing in on.
I agree. So where have you guys traveled elsewhere?
So we got married in Sri Lanka.
I love Sri Lanka. I've been there three times. I swear to you, I'd get on a plane tomorrow.
Let's do a podcast live from there.
Yes! I absolutely adore that country. Okay, anyways.
It's married, our favorite, yeah.
I can't imagine, that must have been amazing to get married there.
It was incredible, yeah. And we flew everyone in from England and it was just amazing. But we had the most amazing time. So for us, that's our favorite place in the world. And we've wanted to go back the last few years, but obviously it's been super risky to go there. So when this year we've said 100% we're going to go. We've done obviously Dubai, Abu Dhabi. We've done Oman. We've done Oman. Oman, yeah, Ziggy Bay, like just incredible. We've done Maldives, another bucket list place to visit.
We're trying to get there next spring. I think next spring we're trying to get there.
It's amazing. To be honest, we took our little boy when he was super little. I think he was about 6 months, and that's not so much fun. There's a lot of sand eating. Right. And
yeah.
I really am looking forward to the day that me and my husband can go and
go
cheers
alone. Yeah.
Teenagers. That's where we're at. But yeah, we've definitely like taken advantage of being at this side of the world. But to be honest, I spend most of my time going back to England because we're super close to my mum and dad, husband's family. So we just always prioritize getting back to England. So every Easter, every summer, every Christmas, we make a trip back. And we have a house there, so it's so nice because, yeah, we can just slot back into the house and the kids have their own bedrooms and they know the routine and the drill. And again, that's another way that I always feel that expat life has worked so well for us, because we've been able to leave and we love coming back. So that's always like, you know, that feeling of like we can't wait to get back to the sun and live in our, you know, Riyadh bubble.
Right.
So it's just so nice having the best of both.
Exactly. Yeah. I always say, is my saying, it's always nice to leave. And then it's always like, it's so exciting to leave because you're going back to your home country or, you know, wherever it is, you're just excited to get out and change of scenery. And then you're so happy to come back at the same time. I feel like as an expat, there's so many different emotions, like in a cyclic cycle, that's a bit quicker than most lifestyles. Mm. Right. So like our lifestyle incorporates a lot of quick change. A lot of emotions come with that. Right. So,
yeah, it's really funny you say that, because I in the last few years, maybe even since Corona, to be honest, I suffer from really bad panic attacks with every change. So when I'm the night before I flew back after Christmas from England to Riyadh, I literally woke up in a panic attack, and then I have them every time my husband books us flight. If we know we're going on to England or vice versa. And it's so subconscious, but I think it's just the idea of flying with kids is always pretty traumatic for me. I hate every second of that part of it. And it's just upping our life and going across and coming back. And like I say, my conscious brain says, well, it's great, you get the best of both. My subconscious it's so difficult.
Yeah. There's not a lot of glamour in commercial flying.
No,
it's not that glamorous. It's rough. It's a rough, you know,
with a two-year-old and a four-year-old, it's literally torture.
Yeah, there's some uncomfort there. I use things to get my nervous system very calm. for yeah. sure.
Yeah, like, yeah, like giving them cowpole. Like anything.
And I'm just... like, as soon as we're in the air and we can get some wine, please serve me a glass. Yeah. Thank you. I know, very
but
much.
That takes ages, doesn't it? Because we have to get out of the soundy airspace. We're like, help. But I feel like that, you know, like there's so many other mums on the plane that always gives me comfort. Like you can yeah. almost like, wave at them as you're walking up and down the aisle 20 million times, going up and down past each other. So it always gives me a bit of comfort to know that we're all in it together. And all of
and
my
I just want to encourage
it.
You that like it only gets better. And then because your kids are going to be used to this, they're going to be such great travelers. Like they're just going to travel so well.
Yeah.
Because they are exposed. Yeah,
they get used to it. And the thing is, I walk straight into Nanny and Granddad and I'm like, right, your time is here now. Off you go. You go.
And then you go and you like have
honestly, they sweep in. And they take them off for me and they're so brilliant. So I just know I have to get through that 7 hours of flight, 6 hours of flight and be like, hand them over. And it is always so worth it. And the memories we get in the summer with our family is obviously the biggest bit that we miss being here. And I think, like you said, it's the emotions around all that, like the guilt and that's my hardest expat thing. Like I love living here and we have a lovely, lovely life, but the niggling guilt, it's relentless, and I don't know if that ever goes away. I think
the guilt from what now? Like, what's
say from that. Being away from family, and okay. yeah, that's a real one for us. So we are parents are super close to the kids, and being away from them is really, really difficult for us. Being around them, I love being around them. Like, I'm obviously still their daughter.
What do they call home? Your kids? Do they call home England?
No, they don't really refer to either. Okay. So my son's 4 and he thinks he has a home in Africa. He doesn't, he's never been to Africa. So I don't trust a word that he says. So he doesn't really understand. He just knows he lives, he's just like, he says to me, what about a holiday home in Dubai? Mate, we don't have a holiday home in Dubai. Like he just, anywhere he picks up, and he's like, he's just so funny.
But I love it.
I think... he's definitely, because he's always been an expat, he sees that his life is split between the two. So he knows he does the summers with Nanny and Granddad and that whole experience and family and aunties and uncles and cousins, etc., etc. And then he knows that when he's here, he goes to nursery more in routine and every day is more similar. So yeah, he kind of just rolls with it. He's totally adapted to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for me, I think it's more me. Like, my husband's pretty chilled, but I'm more like, you know, you never get that time back with your family. Right. So it's just balancing that, right?
But yeah, for sure. Because there's a huge part of me that's like, I want to go see the world. And, you know, my home country is always going to be there. And then there's the part that's like, no, like, my kids need to see their grandmother. You know, my kids see my mom, you know, and my sisters, and my husband's an only child, but still, like, his mom, because he's an only child, like, how much more so should we, you know? So yeah, I feel you. There's definitely a pull between like, screw everyone, let's go travel the world, and then like, wait a second, we have like family obligation and ties to what you said of, you know, taking advantage, because especially as our parents age, right? Like,
yeah. And I think it's that thing, isn't it? Like, I always say to my mom specifically, you know, you brought up kids that you wanted to be international and see the world and all these things. And now we're away, it's really difficult. But that's the children that you brought up. And that's incredible. And that's definitely what I want for my kids as well. And I'm sure when my kids are older and they're off gallivanting the world, I'll feel exactly the same. And I want them to be with me. But it's that thing of just balancing it, isn't it? And how lucky we are to have the two worlds, that we can spend so much time in England, obviously to a point, and then so much time here and have the best of it all.
Yeah.
Which seems, you know, really too good to be true, but that's where we're at.
Yeah, we're in a really great stage because all of our girls are back stateside and boarding. And we have a home back in stateside as well. So that way we have a place to dwell, which again, we didn't have for about 7 years. And it was really tough to find, you know,
extra space in families' homes or whatnot. So having, I think that's pinnacle. Like if you have a space to go back to into your home country, it makes a world of a difference and it makes it a lot easier to go back and visit.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, so I was telling you, like our special stage right now is because they're stateside and squared off and boarding a little bit travel here and there on a long weekend or whatnot. So we are still getting to, you know, dip our toes into getting to see other countries. But then I'm going back stateside more often because of the girls' breaks. Mm. Like we were all there together for Christmas, which was awesome. But then like Dave and I were able to go to Jordan when we came back because he had a long, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's truly been awesome to take. I mean, we miss our girls to death, but it's just been, we're in that stage now. So we're like, okay, where are we going next? Where are we going next?
So nice. Yeah. And you do get that time back, don't you? Like you say, like when they're older and you've done when they're little and that kind of constant need to be around them all the time. Yeah, you get, like we always joke, we just can't wait, like I said, to just be on holiday somewhere, cheersing to our, yep, we've made it, we've done it, they're old enough now. We're still at 2 and 4. Oh my gosh. Oh. Yeah.
I'm in the thick of it.
Yeah.
You're terrible in the thick of it, for sure.
Teenager, whoever he is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God. Today's such a beautiful day. I feel like it's such a crime to be inside. I don't know how it is up there, but down
but
here.
But then the other day I said, oh, I'm just going to go and sunbathe. And I swear the clouds came rolling in as I was saying it. It's so rude.
Today would have been a great beach day, but
yeah, I wish we had the beach. That's the one thing I really miss. In Dubai, you could just nip to Kite Beach, or you could nip down to obviously the Palm or wherever. And here, I really miss dipping my toes in the water for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one thing that keeps us sane in this little compound. We're kind of away. We have to cook a lot. There's really not a lot of restaurants and places to eat because we're about an hour drive from all that, but. Man, we have this beach and it has been a lifesaver.
So nice.
A lot of people, me included. Okay, so really quick, I'm just going to do a rapid fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ask you a question and then you answer back. So these are fun, like Saudi related ones. So do you do Abaya?
Oh my God, is it like a test?
No. So do you do Abaya or no Abaya?
I do know Abaya.
Do you prefer like having a shawarma or khamsa, which is like the rice and the chicken?
See, I don't eat meat, so neither.
Oh, you're like neither.
Yeah, falafel. I'm a falafel girl.
Oh, I love falafel. I swear I could eat that every day. Do you use the greeting marhaba or salam alaikum?
So I say salam alaikum, but every time I say it, my husband's like, you sound so ridiculous. Like I can't even listen to you. Right. Salam alaikum.
Oh my goodness. Do you prefer labneh or sour cream?
Oh, sour cream. I don't like labneh. It's weird.
I love labneh. Okay. Okay, so these are just like little fun ones. Summer or winter?
Winter.
I would prefer summer.
Summer, no way. 50 really? Degrees.
Oh, okay. Oh, you mean like a Saudi summer. You're thinking like Saudi summer. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. Do you prefer to drive or fly?
Oh, fly.
Would you rather travel to the past or the future?
The future.
Street smarts or book smarts?
Street smart.
Ooh.
I've got nothing. If it's book smart, I'm out.
Me and you both. Do you cannonball into the pool or go toe first?
Just depends. I'm a toe first.
Okay. I would be like, it would totally depend on what substances were involved.
There's too much, like I would wobble. Like I'd make a wave so big, like the water would be gone. It would just not.
Would you rather sleep in late or take a long nap in the middle of the day?
If my children would let me do either, it would be, I would love a lay-in.
Oh my God.
Not a 5 a.m., a lay-in. Yes, please.
Oh my God. I feel for you, girl. I'm so beyond all that though now. And all I can say is like, there's another side. There's the light. Just keep going towards it because.
Yeah, it's a dot. It's a
dot. It's there. It's there. I promise.
Okay.
I had, my daughter was 3 when I had my twins. So I had twins.
Twins. And I thought,
yeah.
Does everyone do that? They go.
Yeah, it was a lot. I was in the middle of nursing school. I had newborn twins and a toddler, and yeah, it was a lot. My dad was on hospice. I was taking care of him. It was a lot.
That's a lot. A lot. Yeah. Twins is a lot by itself, let alone everything else.
Kind of crazy. That's why I'm like, listen, if you see me chillaxing and living my best life, trust me.
Yeah, you deserve it. You've done your time.
Trust me. It's been so nice talking to you. And I had a feeling it was going to be really good just based off of like your amazing name.
Amazing. Oh, it was so nice talking to you. And if I'm ever in Cobar or you're ever in Riyadh, let me know.
Yeah, definitely. I should try to get like a get together because you're the second person I've talked to. But yeah, I'll try to hit you up, girl. I mean, you never know. We might bump into each other one day by chance.
In Sri Lanka. That'd be lovely.
Oh my God. Girl, if you ever need a partner to just go travel with, just call me up. I will go with you.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay, great.